Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
This is Jenny. I'm so glad to be here again. You know, Singapore is ranked one of the most livable cities in the world, and our public housing is lauded internationally. Yet it has come to light that beneath our shiny exterior, we have pockets of people who aren't doing well and are struggling to make ends meet. For many Singaporeans, the reality that we have homelessness in our midst is quite jarring. So, to tell us more about this is Regina Wong, who with an international team has been reaching out to this demographic in our population for the past 8 years. Hi, Reg.
Hello.
So glad you can come here and share with us your journey and your experiences.
Thank you.
So let's begin with a definition of homelessness and what you have discovered about the homeless in Singapore.
Well, the homeless in Singapore, like if you go out to benches in HDB estates or to the beach or parks or open areas in the city, and it probably has to be after 10 or 11 p.m., and you will see people sleeping on cardboard. Mm. Yeah, so they are kind of like the invisible people because they only appear after we have all gone home, hoping that no one will see them. So they look like regular people. You know, your vision of a homeless person may be like wearing rags or just looking a particular way, looking dirty, but you actually see them on the MRT, regular cleaners or security guards. So many of them work regular jobs, and others do only odd jobs because they need daily wages to buy food and they can't wait 1 month for a paycheck.
Mm.
And there are those who don't work, but these guys are usually injured from work accidents or they're sick with chronic health problems like diabetes, health disease. Yeah, so in the early morning, they will get up at like 6 a.m. and they'll go and shower. So basically, if you don't come home late and you go out in your normal office hours, you might just miss them. You know, they're not easy to see. And yeah, they carry their lives in their backpacks. So they travel light. And a lot of times people try to give them sleeping bags or blankets or toiletries, and they don't want it because they have to carry their whole life in their backpack and go to work. Yeah, so in our 8 years of work, 90% of those we meet on the street are men. And some, you'll be surprised, they have family homes. They have rental flats. But they choose to sleep on the streets because they can't get along with their families or flatmates. Or they just want freedom. And it's to avoid the conflict and stress of family dynamics. Right. And usually these families are big and complicated.
Right. Yeah, this brings me to the next point. I mean, usually we associate the idea of a home with a number of people living under a roof together, right, with the family. So you mentioned family tension and conflict as a major source for part of this group of people who are homeless. And actually, I think it's not part, it's probably all, because at some point, we all come from some kind, we all come from family. That's where we all start off with. So you probably, in your work, would have now gleaned a lot of insights about just the central role of the family. And through their eyes, you know, what has happened to the family unit that has led to this? And what other observations have you picked up about this?
Maybe I can just share our journey. So when we started this, it was 8 years ago. And in our first 5 years, we didn't really know what we were doing. So we were doing a lot of research to try to help them about economics, advocacy, charity, and all this. And we found it still doesn't go down to the roots of their problems or change the fruit of their lives, which is basically a lot of bad fruit that is happening that leaves them on the streets without their family. So we saw many get saved, but when it came to discipleship or true transformation, like in terms of practical life change, we hit a lot of walls. And they were still entrenched in their old ways. So we realized that true discipleship or transformation cannot happen when the person is not emotionally connected to God as Father, or if he doesn't value himself. And this inner healing has to take place first.
Right.
Yeah, which brings us to the point about family, because you talk to any homeless person, you will find the root of their issue is breakdown of family relationships. So either they ran away from home as teenagers, or they grew up in orphanages. Many, in fact, most are divorced, and their children don't want to see them.
I see. So it's the breakdown in that connection in relationships.
Yes, exactly.
That leaves them isolated and therefore lonely. And maybe the family is still there and they cannot connect back.
Right.
But the family has turned them away and they have nowhere to go.
Exactly.
So this is why they resort to sleeping on the streets.
Yeah, and even like single men who they're not divorced, but all their life, they have not been able to have healthy relationships with women or their own parents. And yeah, most of them choose to isolate themselves, like what you said. Yeah, because to them, living together in relationships are just too troublesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's understandable. I mean, all of us know that relationships can be a blessing, but sometimes it's a huge burden as well, daily in our lives, the stresses from it. It's a major source of stress for everybody.
Yes, that's right.
But when you mentioned that they were entrenched in certain habits, could you tell us a little bit more about some of these habits?
Sure. Okay, let's just look at maybe not atypical, but you see, it's very common to find addicts on the street. You know, they're out there, they are alcoholics, they are in drugs. And when you talk to them, you see them with this immense pain, which they are trying to cope with through their addictions. Now, because they've been in prison and they feel they let their children and parents down, or they've been abusive towards their wives, they beat their wives, and so these wives leave them. And every addict on the streets is filled with this pain of family failure, of being a failure. So if this broken man has never known healthy manhood or fatherhood from his father, or from God the Father, he's not able to reproduce it as a husband or father. And we are really in the work of restoring these men to the Father and modeling the family of God to the lost, so they can see something powerful and feel belonging and acceptance from God first. And so they can also learn what is the biblical role of a man relating to women in general, and what's their role as a husband and father. Yeah, so we really aim to restore them to their families first. And, you know, as we do that, we get a lot of gateways into their families too, like siblings, parents, and their children. And yeah, it's really about holistically working with the entire unit and bringing restoration and reconciliation.
Wow, that sounds like a work that takes a long time. I mean, firstly, you're out at those unearthly hours while the rest of us is resting. And you have to connect with them, get to know their stories slowly over time, and really just establishing trust. And if they have been struggling with connecting emotionally and relationally, how long does it take you guys to connect with them, and what have you done that has worked so far?
Well, when we go out, we try not to go with any agenda. And I think they can really feel if you have an agenda, like you want to go and like share the gospel or say John 3:16 to them, you know.
Or fix them in some
way. Yeah, they're really sensitive to people trying to give solutions to them. Yeah, and they actually have come into contact with many Christians before. They have been invited to concerts and events before, but maybe they had bad experiences. You know, so there are certain baggage when it comes to Christians going out, and they would ask us, you know, in the first 6 months, they would always ask, "Are you from church? Are you from church? And who are you?" And we're like, "Oh, we're just friends. We're just, yeah, we're Christians, but we don't all go to the same church. And we're just here because we want to be your friend and we want to bless you." And that it really involved a lot of action, like just sitting beside them in the street where it's smelly, where they're more mosquitoes just biting you for 1 hour, and they're like ranting because they've never had someone sit down and listen to them for so long before. And I think that in itself is very healing.
To
really tell them that I see you, like Jesus saw them, you know, that restores their dignity. Yeah, so our approach is always build relationship, and we build trust. So they know us as well. It's not just a one-way thing, but they know who we are. And
you share your stories as well.
Right.
Your own human side of life.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, but one of the keys is don't give solutions, because we really need to take time to understand their point of view, their culture, even all the things they have been through, the experiences that made them who they are today. Mm. And sometimes we are very quick to come in and fix them and give the solutions.
Yeah, that's our tendency, lah, because we have a very mechanistic, efficient society.
Right.
And I can't imagine how your team came about to be so literally countercultural. I mean, who in the world has time to just sit down and listen to a total stranger tell stories, right? What was your journey like to get to this point?
Well, it's actually a very long story, because I had been doing ministry for a long time, and it came to a point after many years that God just told me in one particular year to just don't do anything and to spend time in the prayer room. And I'm a worship leader, you know, I do a lot of these stage things, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so to be in the prayer room and to be laboring every day with no one really seeing or no one really thinking that it's very important per se, you know.
Right. Yeah, just to withdraw and...
Right. And we were worshipping.
A place of hiddenness.
Right, yeah. So me and another, like one or two people were doing that for 1 year, worshipping and praying. And at the end of the year, which was around Christmas time, God began to speak to us about social justice. And we began to pray about like abortion, about trafficking and all these nations and... Yeah, praying up a storm. And that was when Christmas came. I think in the weeks leading up to Christmas. And I'm like a very active church goer. You know, I have so many friends and groups. But no one actually invited me that year to any Christmas party.
I
was really waiting for someone to invite me. Like, this so good, didn't that so good, didn't.
It's almost like out of sight, out of mind. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, it's weird because usually I have many choices. But I think this group of friends thought that another group of friends would invite me and all. Yeah.
They didn't coordinate.
Yeah. So, when it happened, I felt so left out. And I felt like I'd been forgotten. And I couldn't do anything about it. No, I was a bit like embarrassed to say, hey, you know, actually, no one invited me. Yeah, but I think God was using that to identify that feeling of being left out by the mainstream, right? And I thought, I mean, at the time, it wasn't a very good attitude, but I thought, fine, if no one invites me, I'll just do something on my own and maybe I'll just go and bless some lonely people, you know? And I just got an idea, you know, like, oh, I just go and find some people on the street and give them gifts. Right, so I thought I was going to go alone. So I bought all these gifts and packed them, like Milo, biscuits, towel, soap. Yeah, and that Christmas night, I think I invited about two or three people to go with me. And we went out together and we started about 11 o'clock, you know, 11 p.m. And we went to the Lavender Street area and we walked and... We walked and there were like one or two people in the void deck. So it was already like Christmas Eve and like people were caroling and all that, having their parties, everyone was enjoying themselves. But towards the end of the night, we went into this market that was closed. It's actually the Victoria Street Wholesale Market where they sell all the oysters and scallops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we walked in and saw about 25 old man sleeping on cardboard. And it was Christmas night, you know, and they were asleep already at about midnight when everyone else was enjoying themselves. It's a public holiday next day. And we realized, wow, these guys, it's like nothing to them, you know. Yeah, it really struck me that the whole church, the whole Christian community is so into this, or even the whole of Singapore is so into Christmas. Mm. But to these guys, it's like nothing. They're just asleep. Mm. So we went in and we started to wake them up. Yeah, we're like, oh, hi, uncle. It's Christmas and we just want to bless you with this present. And slowly, one by one, they began to wake up and they sat up. And they were like, wow, who are you? But they were very receptive, open. They received our presents. And we walked down the whole line, you know, there were like 25 of them. And we ran out of presents. Because I think I only brought like 15. Yeah, so we ended up giving things out of our own pockets, like our chocolates, our biscuits. And we're like, oh, we're so sorry, uncle. We'll come back next week, you know, we'll make it up to you. Yeah, and it was really disturbing, actually, because we also saw in the middle of these rows of uncles sleeping on cardboard and wooden crates, there was a young girl there sleeping, you know, and we were really burdened. She didn't wake up that night, but when we went back to check in, we realized she was pregnant, you know, and she was sleeping on the streets because she had nowhere to go. She had been thrown out by her family.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
So this really burdened us. And yeah, we began to go back every week. In fact, a few times a week, you know, because we sense that, hey, God wants us to be among them. And it was no coincidence, you know, that I had that feeling of identification of being left out, you know, where everyone else is celebrating a happy occasion, but no one remembers you. Yeah, so we just really wanted to bring a blessing to them and to tell them that, hey, you are not forgotten, you're not alone. Yeah, so we went back for like, since then, for the first 6 months, we were like building relationships with them and just listening to their stories, getting to know them. Yeah.
So that's how it began. Wow, it's God calling you away from what you would normally have done. And thankfully you obeyed so that God could open up something in you.
Yes.
And then you can begin to identify with God's heart for a group of people most of us don't even know exist.
Right.
What a powerful story.
Thanks.
And along the way, of course, I'm sure it gets hard. I mean, just hearing you talk about the 1 hour mosquito bite was getting to me. Not a favorite fan of that experience. And there have been things and experiences that have continued to shape you.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is the book Overrated by Eugene Cho, you mentioned, where he challenges young people who are sometimes very enamored and excited about changing the world. And he very cleverly nuanced it with a question. Are you more in love with the idea of changing the world? Or are you actually truly ready to change the world? Can you say more about that?
Yeah, well, Eugene Cho, he emphasizes our own need for personal transformation before seeking to transform other people. And we don't bear good fruit because our good intentions are coming out of the wrong attitudes or even pride. You know, I think even myself doing all this good work, pride is a very big mountain, right? And he has a great quote. We ask God to move mountains, but sometimes maybe we are that mountain, right? And these mountains, I've come to realize, can be our own man-focused ideas or our own independent spirit and relying on our own strength instead of God's. Relying on our own good solutions for justice, you know, or simply not being able to work with other people. Or wanting to perhaps be a maverick or activist because you're looking for identity or man's affirmation. Now, I'm sure a lot of us are guilty of that or have wrestled with all these issues in our lives, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Especially in your young adulthood where you're forming your identity and trying to stake your significance on this world and make a mark, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy, I guess, to get caught up with this things that seem very significant.
Yes.
And then we are wrapping our identity around it, not realizing that.
Mm-hmm.
In so doing, we actually become a problem. We can become problems as well along the way. I like how you mentioned what he said about the mountains because, you know, it reminds us of that very popular verse where Jesus says, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you have faith, your faith is just, you just need small faith to command the mountains to be thrown into the sea, right? And we always think of that verse as external circumstances and obstacles. And we never once reflect on the fact that maybe Jesus is saying, if you have faith, that I can change you, that I can transform you. You can say to that mountain inside you, that hardness of your heart, that pride, that entitlement, their social prestige, you can say to those things, be gone,
mm-hmm.
and they can change.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. That might be possible, right?
That's so good. That's such a good insight.
Well, thank you. Well, the Lord is here with us.
Amen.
So tell me then, what about the last 8 years has really encouraged and empowered you to keep going? Because this is a long, lonely and arduous journey that you're on.
Yeah. I think to see the individual being restored, you know, we don't actually have a lot of results. We don't have big numbers. And we intentionally keep our ministry small so that we can do more for the individual. Yeah, it is quite arduous to journey with a broken individual.
Yes.
It gets messy and chaotic, and most of the time you don't have the answers, and you have more questions than answers. But to see an individual even make a progress, you know, a small step, and we have had several who reconciled with their families.
Wow.
Yeah, and the family came in to help them. Yeah, so to me, that's a success. To me, that is something that encourages me to go on. And, you know, there's another uncle, he was mentally ill. And, I mean, he wasn't like bonkers or anything, but he was just so unstable emotionally that he looked like he was crazy, you know, talking to himself and all that. And to be able to help him process all these layers of emotion, his anger and his unforgiveness and all, that whole long journey, step by step, and to see him normalize and no longer talk to himself or have all these weird behaviors and to stabilize emotionally, it really was an encouragement to me that, if you just focus on the individual, it means a lot to them. And
that's huge.
That's the kingdom of God, you know.
It is.
That he looks at the individual.
Wow. I think it's amazing. It really puts teeth to what we commonly say, that God loves every person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is loving every person. And really, when we think about homelessness, at the end of the day, home is a matter of the heart.
Yes,
when
right.
When the heart doesn't feel safe, doesn't feel connected to another heart, then there's no sense of home. And maybe people are living in homes right now and they are actually homeless.
Yes,
and a short step away from being on the streets.
Right.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming to talk to us, Regina. You've given us a lot to think about individually as Christians and also as a church. I think it's a strong call to us collectively to really consider where our hearts, our own hearts are, and whether our hearts are secure in the Lord and able to house other hearts as well. And for all of you listening, I want to encourage you to look up that episode where I speak with Jason Wong about families. He has some really good insights. And it relates back to what we're talking about here with Regina about the heart of the home. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.